Thanks, Dave.
Well, Dave said I always bring something good. I have this time. It's for many years we've been developing a children's village in Zambia for AIDS orphans, and we have got some calendars, and all the proceeds from the calendars goes towards the AIDS orphan village. The calendars are £2.50. I have to confess, there's a typo, calendar is spelled wrong, but after the 1st of January, you don't notice it. And so, those of you who've just been in real mental anguish, wondering what you can give people for Christmas, there are some for sale. And I do appreciate that you do a lot. I know with the work that Ruth is doing with orphans in Romania, and with Alan's work, I realise you're doing a lot. And so, for every calendar that you buy for £2.50, I'll give 50p into the into the bucket. Right, they're on the table out there.
See how many you can do.
Yeah. Right, I'm going to start with a couple of miracle stories. I know many of you have been praying for my daughter. For those who don't know the situation, she was diagnosed about just over 18 months ago with Hodgkin's lymphoma. And so last year she had 9 months of chemotherapy, which wasn't very pleasant. And she was given what we thought was your clear in January. And then in June they did another routine scan and told her that she'd relapsed. And it was quite traumatic. She'd started to get a few symptoms, and we didn't know whether it was the reaction to the chemo, because obviously it's in your body for a long time, or whether it was further problems. But they said she'd relapsed. One very well-meaning doctor with great bedside manner said, "We can't promise to bring you through this." And the treatment they suggested involved a stem cell transplant, which would be 6 weeks in isolation, etc. And so that was quite daunting. But because they told her some of the side effects of the next chemo she'd be on, she insisted on having some other treatment that would counteract the side effects. But much against the best wishes and the will of the oncologists. Anyway, because this treatment lasted 4 months, it gave the doctors time to monitor this mass, which didn't seem to be growing. In the interim, somebody enabled us to go to a place called Redding in California, where there's a church led by a guy called Bill Johnson that's really embraced healing and seeing God break through in some of those areas. So we went there. She was almost a bit reluctant to go, because if you've been in trouble for some time and everybody's prayed for you, there's almost that sense of, I don't want to be disappointed again. So she was wrestling with, should I go? But she knew that if she had the stem cell transplant, she wouldn't be able to travel for 18 months, and so said, I'll go as a holiday, but I'll go to a meeting. So we went along, and we God really spoke to her and touched her there. Came back, she had some more of these PET scans, it's the latest type of scan. And after 4 months from the initial diagnosis, they said, this is not growing. It is not typical of Hodgkin's lymphoma. So they said, the only way we can find out what is happening is to do a biopsy. So they did that. And the results showed that the mass wasn't cancer. It was, all of us have got a thymus gland, which is big in children, and then it shrinks after puberty. But sometimes this can react to chemotherapy. But it looks like cancer. And they said, actually, it must be thymus. Her first treatment was in Southmead Hospital, and then she was moved to do PRI. But the oncologist consultant in Southmead was a really nice woman, very helpful, very friendly, and a friend of ours works with her doing her administration. So when we got the news that it was all clear, we texted our friends in a cell group. So our friend Pauline went down to see if the consultant knew, which she had done because she'd been part of the case conference. And Pauline in our cell said, this is most unlike this consultant. She came out of the room and said 5 times, it's a miracle. So, that's good. The other miracle story is a bit more topical. It concerns my mother-in-law, who's 100. There have been many times. There have been many times in recent years where doctors have said, if you want to say goodbye to her, you must come up. And the first time this happened, we belted up the M5 and I got done for speeding, got a £250 fine. I think I've dealt with her over that. But anyway, she was taken really ill, and on Wednesday the doctor said it's a matter of time. On Thursday, the doctor said to my sister-in-law and my wife, he said, I've given the registrar for deaths all the information because she won't last the weekend. And there's no convenient time to die, but the weekend is, it is most inconvenient, and he won't be on call. So he said, I've given all the information to the registry for deaths, so you'll just have to ring up. Yesterday, she was sitting in bed eating scrambled eggs. And the health nurse walked in and said, it's a miracle. So do I buy her a Christmas present or not? It's a hard one. So we've had... So there's a couple of miracle stories. What I want to do today is just link some of the things that I know I've touched on when I've been here recently with a verse that's so pertinent for Christmas. Isaiah... hundreds of years before Jesus says these famous words. He said, the Lord himself will choose the sign. A virgin will conceive a child. She will give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel, God with us. That's Isaiah 7 verse 11 to 14. The wonderful message of Christmas is God with us. And what I'd like to do today is just think a bit about God being with us, because sometimes we know God is everywhere, but we don't know he's here. And sometimes we wrestle with, especially if we process some heartaches in life, we know God is everywhere, we know the whole world is in his hands, but is God with us in this? And I want to look at a verse which I found quite interesting and quite challenging. It's in Judges chapter 1 verse 19. It says this: the Lord was with the people of Judah, and they took possession of the hill country, but they failed to drive out the people living in the plains, because the people there had iron chariots. Let me read that again. And can I just ask you to think, what does it conjure up in your thinking, this? Is there an immediate question that comes to your mind? Lord was with the people of Judah, and they took possession of the hill country, but they failed to drive out the people living in the plains, because the people there had iron chariots. Does it raise any questions in anybody's mind? And the question is,
why didn't God's people have iron chariots?
Equipment,
technology.
Yeah. I didn't ask that question.
Yeah. God didn't want them to be in the plains.
Did they need the plains?
Yeah. Did they need the plains? Why didn't they have iron chariots? Did God not want them there? Because, and I realise I'm in the company of an army major here, I would imagine the hill country would be harder to possess than the plains.
Yes.
No.
Because the chariots can't drive into the hills. That's right. So it's easy to take.
Right, there's only 25p going into the... Right. The question that I ask is, it says God was with them and they took the hill country, but they didn't take the plains. Did that mean that God suddenly wasn't with them? Do we just acknowledge that God is with us when things are going well? But what happens when things are more difficult? Did God suddenly take away his presence from them? And I'm asking this not to create doubt in our mind, but to explore. Sometimes we say things and we don't really think through what we say, or sometimes we say things or are almost afraid to ask some questions. Because I know there'll probably be people here who, as you walk through various things in life, you think, well, God's really been with us, but, you know, this part is more difficult. You see, way back in Joshua 17, verse 16 onwards, the people say to Joshua, we'd really like to possess the land, but we're a bit afraid of the iron chariots. And Joshua said, you can overcome the iron chariots. And it's very interesting to me because as I've been looking at the whole journey of the children of Israel through the wilderness and entering into the promised land, one of the things that stopped the children of Israel going into the promised land in the first place was 10 of the spies came back and said, there's giants. And it frightened them, it put them off. But when they got into the promised land, you don't read that they encounter any giants. And were the iron chariots the sort of giants that they were facing? Something that seemed so big, something they'd had the promise that they could overcome. Mm-hmm. And yet, sometimes we're more afraid of the giants in our mind than the giants in reality. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes for us, what stops us, you know, we've been talking about be pressing through, going forward, we're not going to hold back. But sometimes the thing that holds us back is we're afraid that there are giants, whatever the giants might be, and that stops us taking those steps. And sometimes because of that, we end up thinking, well, maybe God isn't with us. And so they celebrated God being with them when they saw victory in the hill country. And God was with them and they possessed the hill country. But then they came into the plains. And what happened to the presence of God? Was the presence of God still with them? Or do we sometimes, very rightly, and rightly so, give thanks to God when we see major breakthroughs? But sometimes when we don't see the breakthroughs, we can blame everyone else. You know, lots of churches I know, they thank God when wonderful things happen, and then when things go bad, they blame the leaders. And we can almost get this mentality of, it's almost disloyal to say we didn't feel God was with us. And so we can find lots of ways to get round it. The wonderful message of Christmas is that God is with us. But what does that actually mean? What would have happened, and I realise this is a bit hypothetical because in this case they didn't even try, what would have happened if they would have taken on the iron chariots? Would they have discovered that they were a bit like the giants that the 10 spies saw felt were there? That when they got there they weren't that gigantic? And I think for some of us, one of the big things that stops us pressing on to embrace all that God has got for us is that we imagine there are iron chariots or giants, that when we actually get there, they weren't that big. Because what we do read in Joshua and Judges is that when they entered the promised land, God had dealt with the giants. But in their thinking, it was this thing that had held them back. And my prayer is that today, if for any of us there are some giants or some iron chariots that stop us being and pressing into all that God has got for us, we can know that God is with us so we can engage with these giants and find that we can be victorious. But what does it mean? You know, his name will be Emmanuel, God with us. And we live in this tension, don't we? We all know that God is everywhere. But we want to know he's here. And maybe, if you're like me, you've got more faith for other people's prayers to be answered than your own prayers to be answered. Anybody feel like that? Mm. I'll get them praying because their prayers work. Yeah. And sometimes we end up with a tension of, we know God is with us, but there's an embracing of that, an acquiring of that, that is so vital for us if we're going to possess whatever God's promised land for us is. And I think for all of us as individuals and for you as a church, there is a promised land, which is that God has made promises to you. And those promises, I think there are sometimes more promises than predictions. I've chatted to lots of people who've almost been overwhelmed with all the personal prophecies that they've had. I was chatting to someone some time ago and he said he'd got a drawer full of personal prophecies, but they were quite disconnected from where he was. And sometimes we have these promises from God and we're not sure whether they're predictions or promises. You with me? Please, if you don't understand what I'm saying, or want to ask a question, or disagree, please chip in, because you know it's informal enough to be like that. I'd rather you ask a question or disagree if you disagree, because I'm sure I've said before, what I do know is that I haven't got all the answers. You know, Paul, the Apostle Paul, had tremendous revelations. God took him to the third heaven. He said, we only know in part. So my knowledge is partial, and so you can disagree with me, because the benefit of a time like this is that if we want to, we can thrash out some issues that we can't if you think I've got to sit and listen to the sermon, right? So please, if I'm not making myself clear, if you disagree, if you've got anything to chip in, please feel very free to do that. And I say that knowing that someone like me who's used to getting up and talking, we just carry on and we can say chip in, but you know, please, you've got the permission to, and I'd rather you do that, so that we're looking at real issues and what's relevant to each of us rather than what I think is relevant to each of us. Okay?
In that case, what is the difference between a promise and a prediction?
Well, I think I think often with a promise from God, there is a condition that we have got to fulfil in order to respond to that promise. So that verse in Isaiah, that was a prediction. You know, God predicted that a child would be born and his name would be Emmanuel. When Moses told the people of God that they would enter the promised land, actually only two of them did. And the reason they didn't is because of certain choices, certain decisions, certain actions. So they never fulfilled the promise because there was a conditional element to it. And you know, if you've had a promise that God wants to make you a Bible teacher, for example, it doesn't mean say that God's now going to wave a wand over you and you'll wake up in the morning with all this knowledge of the Bible. If that's a promise, and a promise speaks about the potential, if that's the potential, then we've got a response to make that says, I will need to get into God's word. Or if the promise is God will make you a man or woman of prayer, he doesn't wave his magic wand and in the morning you wake up and spend 5 hours on your knees. It means that we take the first steps. So I think that's the difference. Often with a promise, there's a response that we have to make to embrace that promise, because a promise is built on potential. When I taught PE, the most frustrating thing I ever found was I'd got kids who had got real potential and could have made our team the best team in the local schools league, but if they didn't make that potential available, if they didn't want to play, then having all the potential didn't do any good at all. So there's a response that's needed for us to embrace the promise of God. So the promise was that they would enter the promised land. Few of them did. It doesn't mean that God wasn't with them. And in the children of Israel in the wilderness, which I know I have talked on here before, they had so many signs of God's presence with them. They had the manna every day. They had the pillar of cloud and fire. There were so many signs of God's presence. But there was a response in the heart of God's people that determined whether they pressed in or not. But what does God being with us mean? What does it mean that Jesus, Emmanuel, is with us? And as you know, just from what I've said about my daughter and previous family situations, which again some of you will know about, we have wrestled over the years with some heartaches, which we all face. We would have loved to have seen Jesus deliver us from them, but I think he's been delivering us through them. And so my daughter, the consultants can say it's a miracle, which we're so thankful for, but it would be nice if the miracle would have been 18 months ago, because the first lot of chemo wasn't very pleasant. So we end up with this this question, or I'm asking the question, if the word became flesh, God with us and dwelt amongst us, what does that actually mean for us? How do I know that Jesus is with me? And there will be times when he saves us from situations and delivers us from the miry pit, as the psalm said, but there are times when he brings us through the miry pit. And when he saves us from the miry pit, we can tell tremendous stories of his salvation and his grace and his being with us. When he delivers us through it, we become more Christ-like, I feel. Because what I'm coming to see, and what I believe, is that most of the circumstances we face are morally neutral. It's how we respond to them. It's finding God in it. It's embracing him. And Paul talks about suffering producing perseverance, producing character, producing hope. And some of the people I know who've processed some of heartache, and the heartache can be in lots of shapes and forms, as you know. It might be personal illness, it might be bereavement, it might be heartache over children. You know, there can be 1,001 things. But some of the people I know who've walked on that journey and held on to God in it have emerged with a more Christ-like spirit. And I believe that's the goal of God for each one of us. He wants us to be like Jesus. That's what he's doing in you and me. You know, when Paul says in Philippians 1 verse 6 that God has committed himself to complete the good work he started, the good work that he started in you and me individually and corporately is to make us like Jesus. You see, there will be a day, John says, when we see him and we'll be like him, because we'll see him as he is. Ephesians 4 says that, you know, God has put various gifts in the church until we all reach maturity and express the full image of Jesus. God wants to make us like Jesus. And us being able to hold on to God sometimes through our difficulties enables that Christ-like nature and Christ-like spirit to be developed and deepened in us. But just a few things that that happened because the Word became flesh, because Jesus is with us. Hebrews, and I'm starting to appreciate Hebrews more and more, it combines something of the majesty of Jesus and his very human nature. In Hebrews 2 verse 18 he says this, verse 17, therefore it was necessary for Jesus to be in every respect like us, his brothers and his sisters, so that he could be our merciful and faithful high priest before God. He could then offer a sacrifice that would take away the sins of the people. Since he himself has gone through suffering and temptation, he's able to help us when we are being tempted. What does God with us mean? It means that whatever you and I are facing, he has been there. He knows about it. Now, there is an interesting debate in some circles. You can argue, and let's be honest, most of the stances we take theologically we can argue from Scripture. But some people will take the stance, because Jesus suffered, we don't have to suffer. What this verse would suggest is that because Jesus suffers, he can come and be with us in our suffering. And one of the things about human nature, isn't it, we often assume no one understands. Nobody's had it as bad as me, sort of thing. And Jesus says, yes, I've been there. I can walk with you through it. I've wrestled with this. I know how you feel. And the wonderful thing about God being with us is that he has walked where we walk. He has endured what we are enduring. And he's done it so he can come and stand alongside us. And he can give us grace. And again, I've probably said this before, we've wrestled with the whole question of healing, partly because we wanted to see it and we didn't see it, partly because we've seen some healings, but lots of folk haven't been healed. My understanding now is that God, because he's a faithful God, will either bring healing or give us grace to walk through the journey. Paul says, doesn't he? You know, he said, I had this fantastic revelation of God, but that didn't make him immune from suffering. And he said, I had this thorn in the flesh, and different people suggest different things it might be, but said, I had this thorn in the flesh. I said, I prayed 3 times for God to take it away. And what God said is, my grace will be made perfect in your weakness. And my belief is that if God is with us, sometimes he will step in with that supernatural power and bring healing, And we will continue to keep praying for healing. But sometimes what he will do is give people grace to walk through where they are. But whatever you're processing, Jesus says, I've been there. I've been tempted in all ways like as you are. Because with that is a real identification. And it says in chapter 4, verse 14 of Hebrews, this is why we have a great high priest who's gone to heaven, Jesus, the Son of God. Let us cling to him and never stop trusting him. This high priest of ours understands our weaknesses, for he faced all the same temptations we do, yet he did not sin. So let us come boldly to the throne of our gracious God. There we will receive his mercy and we will find grace to help us when we need it. Some of you will know Ray Gowdy, Ray and Nancy Leader, a mission organisation called NGM. And this has been written in a book, and I've chatted to Ray so he doesn't mind me saying it. But he went through 12 months of total depression where he really struggled. He got stage, he couldn't stand people being with him. He wanted everybody to pray with him, but he didn't want people to pray for him. He almost couldn't cope with that. And sometimes for Christian, depression is a very hard thing to take because we believe we shouldn't be depressed. I've come that you might have life and life more abundantly. And so if we start to feel depressed, we then feel guilty, and that compounds the depression. But I was talking to Ray, and we were just talking about how theology evolves or changes during times of difficulty. So I asked him how he had changed in this process. And what he said was, he said, my theology is less triumphal, but now I'm trusting Jesus far more. And what Hebrews 4 says is, you know, whatever we're going through, we can boldly go to him because he understands. We're not going to somebody who's so distant. No, God is with us. As John says in the message, the word became flesh and moved into our neighbourhood. He identifies, he relates, he understands. But back to chapter 2 of Hebrews, it says this in verse 10. By God's grace, Jesus tasted death for everyone in the world. And it is only right that God, who made everything and for whom everything was made, should bring his many children into glory through the suffering of Jesus. God made him a perfect leader, one fit to bring them into their salvation. And for me, one of the wonderful things about God being with us is that there is redemption in whatever circumstance we find. So Jesus suffered, why? So that he might bring many of his children to glory. Something of the glory of God might be established in us. In John 8, I think it is, when they take the blind man to Jesus and said, why is he blind? And did his parents sin? I see he got some hidden sin in his life. And sometimes in the church, I've heard people say there must be hidden sin in their lives. With what we've processed as a family, various people have said to us, there must be hidden sin. And have given us all sorts of reasons why my daughter had cancer and why we had 7 court cases over false allegations, etc. And people have said there must be hidden sin. I don't really believe in hidden sin. I might be hiding some sin from you, but it's not hidden from me or God. But when we say there must be some hidden sin, we get into this thing, gosh, you know, how will I ever find this hidden sin? I don't think it's quite as mystical as that. And they said to Jesus, you know, why is this man like he is? Is there hidden sin in his life? Jesus said, no. He didn't sin and his parents didn't sin. It's just that God might be glorified in it. And to me, the redemptive nature of God being with us is that glory can come into God's people through whatever we process because he's with us in it. And he has the ability and the desire to change what we're processing into glory. Because suffering brings perseverance, and perseverance character, and character hope. Jesus being with us brings redemption into all of our circumstances. And if we're going to be as effective as we want to be in seeing people come to faith, And I think the things that you're doing with the connections is fantastic. I think what you're doing in the town is fantastic. But if we're going to bring, see many people come to faith, they're going to bring all their baggage with us, with them. They're going to bring a lot of issues. And we've got to introduce them to a God who's with them, who understands their baggage and can bring glory out of that baggage. And Jesus suffered so that he might bring us to glory. And my prayer is that if we can embrace that God is with us, truth, then something of God's glory will be established in our life, but we will help bring many sons and daughters to glory. We will bring something of God's glory. And again, my apologies if you've heard me say this before, but I often used to think, well, what is the glory of God? I thought it was some mysterious thing, you know. And those of you who are old enough to have seen the Ten Commandments, the film, not the real thing, the film.
That's really impressive, dear Ben.
Yeah. I've been around a long time. Whenever God's glory is there, there's lots of smoke. And so God's glory seems to be equated with smoke. But the God who's with us, it says in John 1, John says, and we beheld his glory. And yet he was an ordinary bloke. Divine, but ordinary bloke walking around. And John says he was full of grace and truth. God's glory was expressed in Jesus in grace and truth. The word truth, I think sometimes with our evangelical backgrounds, we think truth means, you know, doctrinal truth. One of the literal meanings is reality. When Jesus was walking around, there's something so utterly real and so full of the grace of God, that the glory of God was embodied in this. And if God's glory is going to touch his church, and we'll evidence it in lots of ways, but one of the evidences will be that we'll be people full of grace and truth. And as we embrace the one, Emmanuel, God with us, as we hold on to him, if our journeys are difficult, and we rejoice with him when our journeys are not difficult, because we will all go through phases when, because so much in life is a cycle, isn't it? Times when there's great blessing. I mean, say God was with us and we took the hill country and then, hang on a minute, it's not so easy now. We go through those cycles, that's life. But as we embrace the grace and truth, something of God's glory will become evidenced in his people. And what do the people in Chippenham, when you go out in the town, want to see? They want to see real people who've got something different about them. And the message of Christmas is Emmanuel. The Word became flesh and dwelt amongst us. God is with us. And I hope that we can journey with the God who we see tangibly with us when we take the hill countries. But when we face our giants or the iron chariots, we know that he's still with us. I think looking back over this past year, the most simple thing that has had the most profound revelation to me is... I was talking to a guy who works with Christians in persecuted countries, lobbies governments to see prisoners released who have been imprisoned for their faith. And he's wrestled with the whole thing of, you know, why hasn't God answered their prayer? And he wrote just a very simple thing, which to me has been the most profound thing that I've read or thought about all year, which sometimes these things, they're so simple, you think, why didn't I think of that? And he was wrestling with, why aren't these people seeing the breakthroughs in prayer? And his revelation was, I came to see that the silence of God did not mean absence. Because God is with us. And sometimes even the silence of God does not mean the absence of God. It means that he's doing something fresh in us. He's making us face our iron chariots, face our giants. And when we approach them, we might find he's already dealt with them. So that's a few thoughts that I just mentioned, one or two Christmas things to make it sound topical, but it's what I want. Are there any questions or comments or illustrations? Anybody who's been able to relate to what I've said, who, you know, just your own story might help us put a bit more flesh on it?